The old man was riding the gray horse across the open ground in front of the trees. He had taken his hat off, and the white hair and the unmistakable white head were visible from a long way off. He was walking the horse slowly along the ground among the first rows of dead where the cannon had begun to take them as they stepped out of the trees, and the retreating men were slowed at the sight of him. Longstreet stopped. The old man reined up and stood for a moment immobile, head turned eastward toward the enemy, the gray hat on the horn of the saddle. He sat there motionless as a statue, and the men coming back began to turn toward him. He sat looking down, talking to them. Longstreet stood watching him. He knew that he would never forgive the old man. Never. He stood paralyzed, holding the rifle, and tears were running down his cheeks. The old man saw him and began riding toward him. Longstreet could hear him. "It is all my fault. It is all my fault." And men were already arguing with him and shaking their heads in rage and shame. But Lee said, "We shall rest and try it again another day. Now you must show good order. Never let them see you run." There were men all around him, some of them crying. A tall man in a gray beard was pleading with Lee to let them attack again. A bony boy in a ripped and bloody shirt had hold of the halter of his horse and was insisting that the general move to the rear. Lee said again, "It is all my fault." But they were shaking their heads. Lee saw Longstreet. Longstreet waited, the rifle in his hand. Lee rode slowly forward. A crowd of men was gathering now, 100 or more. The stream to the rear had slowed. Now it was quieter, and the nearby cannon were no longer firing, and Lee came forward out of the smoke and the nightmare. His face was hard and red, his eyes bright and hot. He had a stiff, set look to him, and both hands held hard to the saddle horn. And when he looked at Longstreet, his eyes had nothing in them. The old man stopped the horse and pointed east. He said in a soft, feathery voice, "I think they are forming over there, General. I think they may attack." Longstreet nodded. The old man's voice was very soft. Longstreet could hardly hear. Lee looked down on him from a long way away. Longstreet nodded again. There was motion in front of him, and suddenly he saw George Pickett, bloodstained. His hat was gone, his hair streamed like a blasted flower. His face was pale. He moved his head like a man who has heard too loud a sound. He rode slowly forward. Lee turned to meet him. Longstreet was vaguely amazed that Pickett was still alive. He heard Pickett say something to Lee. George turned and pointed back down the hill. His face was oddly wrinkled. Lee raised a hand. "General Pickett, I want you to reform your division in the rear of this hill." Pickett's eyes lighted, as if a sudden pain had shot through him. He started to cry. Lee said again with absolute calm, "General, you must look to your division." Pickett said tearfully, voice of a bewildered, angry boy, "General Lee, I have no division." He pointed back down the hill, jabbing at the blowing smoke, the valley of wrecked men, turned and shuddered, waving, then saying, "Sir, what about my men?" As if even now there was something Lee could do to fix it. "What about my men? Armstead is gone. Garnet is gone. Kemper is gone. All my colonels are gone. General, every one. Most of my men are gone. Good God, sir, what about my men?"